Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for the month of June. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. With summer just 3 weeks away, we're entering into one of the busiest times in the year for most people, and the Bay State is no exception. This month, we'll be looking at chapter activities in the Bay State, some exciting challenges for young students, and we'll begin the show with Brian Charlson talking to us about one of the major activities of the summer, the ACB National Convention. Good evening, Brian. Welcome to Council Connection. And it's been a while, hasn't it?
It has. You haven't seemed to suffer in terms of content for this show. It's been excellent.
Well, we try not to suffer in content and hope that the listeners don't suffer either.
But, no, I'm sure they don't. I was thinking of you today as the Sweetwater Pool people left my house.
Oh.
The first weekly visit to try to keep the pool clean.
Ah, yes.
And you and I share that affliction.
Well, yeah, it is when the bill comes around, but on the other hand, it's awfully nice in the summertime when we want to take a swim or invite friends to do the same.
Or when we want to host friends to come and do the same.
Right,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But we haven't had what you would call swimming weather yet.
Not this year. No, well, we did for a couple of days, and of course, during those 2 days, my pool wasn't ready.
Exactly.
I was ready, but the pool wasn't ready.
Pool was not ready. Yep. No. Same thing here. No. Same thing here. Nonetheless, the season is moving on, and summertime for me anyway is always a matter of how many days to the ACB convention.
That's right. And that, of course, is the main event for anybody who wants to think outside the local area.
Exactly. I know that most Bay State members haven't had the opportunity to go to the national convention, but I'd really, really recommend that if you don't do it this year, that you really try to do it in the next couple of years. We're going to be holding this year's convention in Reno, Nevada.
That's right.
It's proving to be quite the experience for people, because although we've shortened the convention by a day, the fact of the matter is that airfares have gone up more than hotel rates have gone down.
I found that out when I booked my flights.
I believe it.
Yeah, there was a visible groan from the wallet as I paid the money.
Exactly. And some of us are getting there the hard way. Kim and I are flying through San Francisco.
I am too, actually.
So you know the geography is a little backwards. We're probably going to wave at Reno on the way by.
Right.
To San Francisco and then turn around and fly back again.
I like to call it the slingshot flight.
Well, it does do that.
Yeah.
It does do that.
But nevertheless, it's...
But it's going to be a great year at the convention. The Bay State Board had its meeting a few weeks ago and finalized who is going to be doing what at the convention. And I thought tonight might be the right time to talk to those who listen to this show to hear a little bit more about what it means to be involved with Bay State and the ACB convention.
I think that's a good idea, Brian.
Why don't we start out with your role, Steve?
Okay, well...
You are going to be what?
I am going to be reporting to the nominating committee and attending the nominating committee meeting. And that is an interesting event for a couple of reasons. One, it is very closed doors. You do not talk to anybody about what goes on in the nominating committee until after the report has been given at the convention. And the other thing is when they say the nominating committee starts at 5:45, which is when it starts this year, you had better be there by 5:45, because if you come after they've closed the door to that room, you will not be allowed in for any reason.
That's right. Again, the nominating process is to try to be fair to one and all. Each affiliate gets a single vote, so it doesn't matter how large or small your affiliate is.
Right.
And in the process, like there is on the floor, there's nominating speeches and seconding speeches, though they tend to be fairly short. And again, there are restrictions on who can actually be a delegate. If you're running for office, surprise.
Yeah, you can't be a delegate.
You can't be a delegate.
And that makes sense because you wouldn't want somebody on the committee that is approving the slate to be saying, well, of course I approve of me.
Exactly, exactly. Now, there's some other components. A board officer cannot be a member, an ACB board officer.
Right, for the same reason.
Members can.
Mm-hmm.
That is, general directors can.
Is that even true in the year when new directors may be voted in?
Yeah, as long as they're not directors, as long as they're not running for election.
Okay.
And again, keep in mind that that the way it works in ACB, half the general directors run in 1 year, and the other half run 2 years later, since
right.
they have that 4 year term for board members, and then officers are voted in the opposite year.
Yes, yes. You have to be a mathematical wizard to keep all this straight.
Keep all that straight, exactly.
Now,
but it's quite interesting, and I've served on that committee a number of times over the years, and probably the more interesting thing is during the opening roll call of the convention, we're asked to say who our delegate, alternate delegate, and member to the nominating committee is going to be. And all those who are thinking about running are busy trying to see if they have a person who's going to be on that committee who could speak for them.
And this is some of the stuff, by the way, that you don't really get a sense of when you listen to the convention on ACB radio. And, of course, this year, as always, it will be broadcast. And that's great for the people who don't get to go there. But you still miss all of that activity on the floor. And that is one of the things that, in my mind anyway, really gives you an up-close and personal experience as to what democracy is all about.
Absolutely, absolutely. And strictly as a matter of personal opinion, it's one of the things that give me pause about online voting.
Yes, me too.
Because I have to tell you that the reason I vote for one person over another has less to do what people have said about them than it has to do with my impressions of that individual. I don't think anybody's ever been elected to office who isn't present at the convention that you didn't have a chance to meet and ask questions of, either by the Board of Publications Candidates Forum or each affiliate has an opportunity to hold a caucus. And in fact, Bay State holds a joint caucus with Maryland, Florida, Massachusetts, and from time to time, a couple of other very small affiliates join in.
New England well. Affiliates.
You got it. So
Maine and Connecticut and yep. Those. And you know, the other thing that I find, too, sometimes is what will sometimes sway a vote for me is just a personal encounter that I might have out in the hall or on the way to somewhere with somebody who's running that has nothing to do with the candidate's forum or anything else. It's just something that happens in the convention. And if you're not there, you miss all of that.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have to say that, you know, somebody else can ghost what you write and
exactly.
put up. But what comes out of your mouth is
yes.
your own doing.
Yes.
And we get a chance to hear that pretty frequently, especially those of us who are members of more than one affiliate, both a state affiliate and maybe a couple of special interest affiliates. Then the board also elects a delegate and an alternate delegate. Pretty much by tradition, the president, if possible, is the delegate, and I will be the delegate this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the alternate delegate, the individual who needs to be available to take the president's place when for one reason or another the president can't be present, is Frank Ventura this year. He's second vice president of BSEB.
Right.
Typically the first vice president would be that person, but David Kingsbury won't be able to attend the national convention this year. We've also elected others to that alternate position when we felt we needed to educate some folks.
Yeah. And the good thing,
you don't want to see the same face every year, year after
right.
year after year.
And the good thing about being alternate is that you aren't quite as bound to the convention floor as the delegate. Because really, you're only, the only requirement for you to be there is if the primary delegate can't be for some reason, and then you're
exactly.
supposed to sit there and fill in, which makes it a little bit less incumbent on you to be there all the time. Unless, of course, your primary delegate is somebody who just decides that they're going to take off and jump in the
yeah.
swimming pool or go to the casino or who knows what, which
exactly.
usually doesn't happen, because if you're the primary delegate, you're serious enough about wanting to be involved in things, so you just don't do stuff like that.
Exactly, exactly. Now, Bay State Council is lucky enough to have a significant enough treasury that we underwrite part of the cost of the delegate and alternate delegate. So that also makes it very clear that they're supposed to take this job very seriously.
That's right.
While there. One of the things that people may not understand is this whole concept of delegate voting. Now, while everybody who is a paid member of ACB has their individual vote when they come to the convention, each affiliate is given an extra vote for every 25 members or major part thereof. So in other words, if an affiliate has 100 members, then that affiliate also can cast an additional 4 votes.
Right.
And in the case of Bay State Council, we have 9 delegate votes. And when we get to convention, when there is what is called a roll call vote, where we both vote as individuals and we vote as delegations, that will be for any election. And in the case of things like resolutions and perhaps changes to the bylaws, those things, if there's not a clear majority, and then there might be what's called this roll call election.
Yes.
So here in Bay State, we've followed a particular practice for how to divide up those 9 votes when that time comes. That is, a designated individual will walk down the length of the row of Bay State members, and usually we have our own row or maybe even 2 rows.
That's right.
And ask this person, if you're willing, would you tell us who you voted for so that we can use that to determine how to divide the votes.
Yes.
Now, we can only divide to the half vote. But nonetheless, we really try to be representative of those present. We don't put all of our votes in the hands of one person to determine how that should be done.
Now, some states use a somewhat different system.
We call it the unit rule.
The unit rule, thank you. The unit rule means that if, say, the delegate walks up and down the aisle and asks, and we'll say there are 15 people from Bay State that are at the convention, and that's often the case. We may have that many. And say 10 of those people say they're going to vote for candidate A, and the others say they're going to vote for candidate B. If we were using the unit rule, all of Bay State's votes would go to candidate A, regardless of the other 5 people.
Exactly, exactly. We've really tried to stay away from that as a general principle.
And I'm glad we have. I don't think that's really the way that it should be done, especially if you have a big state. Now, for instance, some states have upwards of 25 votes. And, you know, that's when you think about your whole delegation, you know, taking 25 votes, a block of 25, And say your majority and minority of the people that are there is almost evenly split. To say that you're going to get 25 votes, to my mind, just isn't fair.
Right. And so, again, Bay State being kind of, you know, the bed of democracy and all, we do that. Now, the one part that we do suffer on a little bit, in all honesty, is we also believe not only in one person, one vote, but we also believe in the secret ballot.
Yes.
So when we vote, we are given a little card, and we're asked to tear off a certain number of corners that represents the candidate we want to vote for. Unfortunately, for figuring out the delegate, there's no way in Bay State that we've found yet that would give us the ability to make that determination of how to split the vote without somebody being informed. And typically we ask the delegate or the alternate delegate to be the one who queries, and they keep what they find to themselves.
Right.
They
right.
You know, we try to honor that to the best of our ability.
Yeah.
So those three individuals are going to be representing Bay State directly, and they were all elected to their positions. So in as much as elected individuals elected these people, it means it's pretty representative. And then, like you said, we have anywhere from 10 to 15 people who attend. And those individuals will sit with Bay State's delegation. We're all seated for every event except day one in our delegations. But, Steve, you're a member of more than one affiliate.
I am.
You have to decide where you're going to sit at a given time.
Well, and usually that's pretty easy because the special interest affiliates that I'm a member of are small enough so that they don't generally sit with each other. They people tend to sit in their state affiliate, and so the whole business of delegate becomes a lot trickier when you are in a special interest affiliate, because then you have to figure out how you're going to find the people in your affiliate to poll them for the votes. And what often happens is at the business meetings of the special interest groups, everybody will say, well, okay, we think – and we don't always know, because sometimes the business meeting actually happens before the slate gets reported. But usually you have a kind of an idea of who is out there. And so in the business meeting, everybody will say, well, you know, if candidate X and candidate Y are running for a position, how should we split our votes? Now, that works well until you get what's called a runoff situation where, say, for instance, there's a candidate X, a candidate Y, and a candidate Z, and you have another election, a runoff election, and then the question is, well, what do we do now? And if you can find everybody in your affiliate, then you ask. But sometimes it's up to the delegate to kind of just make a decision and say, well, you know, I can't find everybody to figure this out, so I'm going to do what I think is best. And that can get you in trouble sometimes.
It certainly can. And I've been in that awkward situation because am I president of Bay State Council, but I'm also president of Library Users of America.
That's right.
So, and I'm an active member also of Guide Dog Users, ACB Lions, is there any other? Braille Revival League.
I was just going to say BRL.
You know, what I tried to do is to find out where those special interest affiliates' one chair is located. And that's where their delegate will be seated.
Right.
And I will, after I deal with my business within my state affiliate, run over to those chairs and say, I vote X.
But sometimes,
as many as I can find.
Yes, but sometimes the special interest affiliates don't request chairs. See, part of the first general session, for those of you who don't know it, is that each state says how many chairs they need for the meeting. And, you know, so as Brian said, on Sunday, and this year it'll be Saturday because we're starting a day early, everybody sits wherever they sit. And then after that, the rows and there's signage and everything that tells you where you're supposed to be. And so part of that Sunday night business is to tell the secretary how many chairs you need for the convention. And a lot of the special interest affiliates won't even ask for a chair because the assumption is that people are just going to sit with their state affiliate. And that's what they do.
And again, another thing people need to understand is the convention is made up of two major parts. There is the national convention that happens each morning, as well as, in this case, Saturday night.
Yeah, the general sessions.
And there is that's called the general sessions, exactly. And then the afternoons are split up by business meetings of the special interest affiliates, as well as some committee activities. But that means that prior to elections, which will happen of a combination probably of late Thursday session and Fridays.
Well, now be careful.
No, this time it will be Wednesday.
Rewind.
Late Wednesday.
And Thursday.
And Thursday.
Right.
But by then, most of the affiliates will have had at least one meeting, and we'll have an opportunity for the delegate to say, I'm delegate, but I'm going to be sitting with Florida, or I'm our delegate for BRL, and I'm going to be sitting in Virginia, whatever
right.
it might
right.
be. So you, as a member, have to take that into consideration.
That's right.
As these things go.
And again, there's
it's not as straightforward, is it?
No, it's not. And again, there's a lot of running around on the floor. And of course, now it's a little bit easier because we have cell phones, which of course makes things different. And we also have secret ballots. Now, remember, I was going to say this before when we were talking about secret ballots, that before the secret ballot, they had what was literally called a standing vote. And what that meant was that they would say, all of those in favor of candidate A, stand up. And they literally went around the room and counted the people who were standing. And of course, you're counting people who are standing by their seats, and you got people running up and down the aisles to find their delegates and you know, tell them how they're going to vote. And it got to be pretty confusing.
Exactly. So I much prefer the ballot box approach when it comes to candidates, especially.
Yeah, it does make things more orderly.
Right. It's also quite fun, actually. People should understand that this all sounds fairly chaotic. Listen in on ACB radio and just see how it really is. While the paper ballot is being dealt with, the delegates are asked to line up at microphones and during the roll call say how their delegation is going to split its vote.
That's right.
So it gets kind of that national campaign kind of feeling about things during that part of the convention.
And life gets really interesting, as it did for me one year when I couldn't find a microphone and I was the delegate for ACBRA. And it's a good thing I have a fairly powerful voice because I just yelled out. But it was a very funny situation because that year I was running the board, which is quite a job in itself when you're dealing with 16 different microphones and you got to make sure that they're up, they're down, they're on, they're off, and, you know, so that you don't get feedback. And all of a sudden, it was time for ACBRA, and the delegate calls out each affiliate. They do them in alphabetical order. And, of course, I get up, and I walk away from the board table, and I realize I have no idea where any of the mics are. And I'm behind the stage, and I'm wandering around and not finding the mic, and pretty soon it's going to be my time, and I just had to yell out. And, of course, because I yelled, everybody could hear it, but anybody who was listening to the radio would have heard something way in the background. And the only reason they would know is because the secretary would then say ACB Radio Amateurs casts 3 votes.
Right. Exactly. Now, there are 2 other Bay State people that people are going to appreciate during the course of the convention. Of course, one is our own Kim Charlson, president of the American Council of the Blind, and she'll be the primary presiding officer throughout the convention, and she's had quite a bit to do with the actual list of speakers and those kinds of things. And, for that matter, Rick Morin. You had just mentioned that you ran the board in the past, and Rick now runs that board and literally runs from mic stand to mic stand to make sure everything's got its batteries in, because you're all wireless mics, and gets all that audiovisual going while Larry Turnbull, the executive director of ACB Radio, is busy manning a second board, all to deal with the broadcasting of things. The other thing that I've been involved with today was putting in all the necessary requests for recordings and microphones in all these breakout meetings that occur. So people who really pay attention and really are interested in certain subjects, you should not only listen to the convention live, but you should make a real point of listening to the schedule of what's going on ACB Radio.
That's right.
Because events that can't be done live, will be recorded, and many of them will find themselves in the programming.
That's right.
During the month following the convention.
And, of course, you know, and it's always been true, there are certain people who make their own recordings of whatever's going on from the audience. And so, you know, you may, if you know the right people, you can also get those kind of recordings. But a lot of times those are more difficult to listen to, because when you're far away from the speaker's table, you mostly get a lot of noise from the audience, you know, people shuffling things around and bumping things on the table and that sort of thing. So, you know.
And ACB has been very lucky. For the past 3 years, we've been building up our recording capacity.
Yes.
So that we have professional recorders in most meetings. It's all on a, as requested by the organization, you know, the special interest affiliate, Library Users of America records everything but its business meetings, since that wouldn't be very interesting a month later.
Right.
And Guide Dog Users does the same. But most other affiliates record whatever their, if you will, keynote is, the what they consider the best part of their program.
Right.
And they can use that as an affiliate, or they can give permission for ACB Radio to broadcast that.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of interesting things coming up. July, it can't come soon enough, either for sunshine or for the convention, for that matter.
Well, other than the convention, which
here,
is...
Here locally, you know, it's the social time of the year.
That's right.
So we've had a wonderful walk and bird walk here in Watertown that the Charles River, just prior to the Charles River chapter meeting with Jerry Barrier, our affiliate secretary, who's a great birder, led. Again, we're going to be holding a few formative meetings here before this month is out. We'll be holding a meeting in Worcester this Saturday to see about creating a Worcester chapter once again.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also be holding a meeting in Boston to determine whether or not we have interest to create a Boston chapter.
Which, and that's been in the works for a couple of years now, at least the planning stages of it anyway. I know Frank's been very interested in that.
Exactly. So all the affiliates are out there being pretty busy, conducting meetings, having social events, those kinds of things.
Which is kind of what summer is all about.
I agree. I think that that's an important part of things.
Yes.
We continue to have both... Well, all three, the Council Connection, the Baylines newsletter, and Baylines Express as ways for people to hear about what's going on in the world of BSCB one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of ways for people to stay connected. And if they want to get a hold of us, Steve, what do they do?
Well, they can leave a message in our mailbox at 617-923-4519. Or
you can email me, president of the Bay State Council, at Brian, that's B-R-I-A-N, dot Charlson, C-H-A-R-L-S-O-N, at Carol, C-A-R-R-O-L-L, dot O-R-G. That's my work address, and it's the one I quite honestly find time to read during the course of the day.
Well, it's and hopefully people will do that if they have things to say, and use all of those methods of contacting us. And other than that, Brian, I guess it's time to let you get back to continuing to make your preparations, and we'll see you at the convention.
That's exactly right. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a little bit of sound to go along with that.
Maybe.
We'll talk to you later, Steve.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. BSCB President Brian Charlson telling us about the ACB National Conference and Convention. There's still time to register if you're interested in going. Registration closes on June 20th. There's always lots to do at convention, and I hope to see many of you in Sparks, Nevada this year. Chapters are an important part of what we do in BSCB, and Membership Chair Mary Haroyan has been working hard to rebuild the Worcester chapter. Here she is to tell us about it. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show again tonight. We're going to be talking about kind of an exciting thing for the Worcester area. You want to tell us what it is?
Yes. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
Yes, so this Saturday, June 3rd, from 10 to 12, we are finally going to have a gathering of, right in Worcester, of people who are blind, vision impaired, both members already of Bay State Council of the Blind, you know, through other affiliates, or people who are not members.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a meeting in Worcester to talk about the, you know, potential viability of forming a Worcester or slash Central Mass chapter of BSCB.
Now, there was a Worcester chapter a while ago, but it kind of fell apart,
yes.
Right?
Yes, there was. We were together from as a chapter from probably about 2000 till about 2009 or 10.
Okay.
So, yeah, so we were together for a while, and it was we were pretty active. But, you know, we lost people, and other people didn't want to resume or take the role of officers. So we decided to disband. But many of the people still remained as members at large.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know, so, but I think it's time now to revisit, you know,
okay.
Forming a chapter, because there's a lot of people in the area, you know.
And, right. And it's not always easy for people to get into Boston or other places just because they want to have a monthly meeting.
Oh, absolutely. Correct. And I think it's really important for Central Mass to have a presence.
Well, yeah. And there are some, I mean, I guess every chapter has certain issues that they deal with, but in a way there's specifics to the area that the chapter is in. So that, for instance, say, if transportation is an issue, it's a very different issue in Watertown, we'll say, than it would be in Central Mass.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Transportation, paratransit, for sure, is very different. And I think that could certainly be a really major issue that we
sure.
as a chapter would be
yeah.
looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, are there any other kinds of things that, for those who are kind of sitting on the edge here and not quite sure whether they want to be at a meeting, you know, what could we do to persuade them that
right.
They really should be there?
Well, we're fortunate enough that, you know, Brian and Kim Charlson will be coming out along with Vicky Vogue.
Okay.
They'll be coming out. And actually, Kim and Brian came out, you know, back in 2000 when we had our first meeting
mm-hmm.
as well. Mm-hmm. So they'll be coming to speak as, obviously, both as BSCB and ACB president.
Yep.
And just enlightening people about the organization, those who may not be as familiar, as well as those who have been members.
Right.
You know, and it's hopefully just a chance for people to meet each other
mm-hmm.
and talk with each other and maybe talk about issues that they think are important that would want to be, you know, addressed by a future chapter or by the organization.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I hope it all goes well and that you get a good showing on Saturday, and not only a good showing on Saturday, but a group of people who want to carry it forward.
Yes, hopefully. We have about, you know, excluding the Charlsons, we have about 15 or 16 people.
That's good.
That have expressed interest in coming.
That's quite good.
Yes, so we're hopefully most of them will come. We're going to have some breakfast pastry and coffee,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be held at 799 West Boylston Street.
Okay,
in Worcester, we have that's actually at the MAB office. Well, my office is in that building, the MAB Community Services, but we have this conference room space in that building
okay.
that's owned by the Seven Hills Foundation. So we'll be able to use that space.
So if anybody wants to, and if anybody who hasn't signed up still wants to do that, who should they contact?
Well, they can contact me.
Okay.
And they can call me at home. My phone number is 508-853-6445.
Okay.
And, or they could, you know, email me, but, you know, I think remembering my phone number is probably easier.
I think
you know?
That's probably
yes.
the best
yes.
way, and we all have phones and not all of us have email. So,
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Well, let's hope you get lots of calls and lots of attendance and
yes.
more to the point, a lot of interest.
Yes, hopefully. Yeah, we're hoping to, you know, at least, you know, I think there is going to be some interest and see if people really want to stay together as a chapter once they you know, have a chance to have this initial meeting, and then people willing to step up and be officers, and you know,
don't scare them until they get to the meeting. Then's the time to talk to them. And of course,
oh yeah, no, this is going to be a general interest meeting. I'm not even going to talk about so much officers and things like that, just to see what kind of interest there is. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, good luck with it, and hopefully you'll be back on the show to give us a report of how things went.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
For those of you living in the Boston area, there will be a chapter planning meeting on Saturday, June 17th from 10 to 12 p.m. at the DPC office, 89 South Main Street in Boston. If you're interested, contact Frank Ventura at 617-267-1067 or email him at frank.ventura@littlebreezes.com. That's frank.ventura@littlebreezes.com. You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbofma.org and look for the Council Connection. Last summer, Our Space, Our Place held a very successful coding camp. It was so successful, in fact, that they decided to do it again this year. Here's Cheryl Cummings, president of Our Space, Our Place, along with Lynette Tatum, the coding instructor, to tell us more about this year's coding camp. Good evening, ladies. Welcome to Council Connection. And I think, if memory serves, this is the second time you've been on the show, maybe?
It is. Yes.
Yeah. So tell us what this is all about.
This is Cheryl, and I would say coding camp. So basically, as we sort of looked around and thought about future employment or even present employment opportunities, but since Our Space, Our Place works primarily with middle and high school age kids, it's future employment.
Sure.
We thought about coding because it is a big field, and it's anticipated that it will continue to be a field of really viable and lucrative employment. So we thought about, well, how do you make that accessible to kids who are blind? And in our case, you know, sort of following the definition of legal blindness and, of course, the sort of new population that the Commission for the Blind is serving, so blind and low vision kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you say accessible, do you mean the accessible in terms of the tools that are being used or accessible in terms of the code that they write? What are you looking at here?
I'd say yes to both.
Okay.
So as you said, this is the second year we're doing this. Last year, to get to sort of the content of the class, we did some research and looked at what's available to teach kids who are actually non-disabled kids, and also what was available to teach kids who are disabled. And as you can imagine, I think some of it has changed within the year, but there was just a lot of tools that were not accessible. You know, kids who were blind kids who were totally blind could not use many of the tools that were available.
Well, many of them are graphic, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there is a program that was developed by some professors at the University of Washington in Seattle that, it's called Quorum, that sort of introduces coding to kids.
Okay.
That is not graphic. Mm-hmm. But at the time, we wanted to sort of introduce tools that we thought were more sort of fundamental to coding that kids could then build on as they moved forward.
Well, now, sometimes, at least my understanding of the way a lot of this goes, is that when you are hired in a place, they will say, do you have a specific skill with XYZ program? And if you don't have that skill, they're not the least bit interested. I mean, for instance, I do editing, I do audio editing using SoundForge, and if I go to some place and they say, well, we're not really interested, because we don't use SoundForge. So, do you find the same kind of thing true in this kind of, endeavor that you're doing here?
It may be, but I would tell you, and I've heard this from like professionals in the technology field, the sort of tools that we introduce the kids to, they are truly the fundamental, they're the foundation, I should say, of coding.
Yes.
And so these are the things that it doesn't matter what else, what other languages you know, you need to really know these before you can progress on to anything else.
So when your kids get through with the class that they're taking, what will they be able to do, assuming that all goes well and they pay attention and, you know, that sort of thing?
I'm going to ask Lynette to talk about that.
All right, that's,
she's our instructor.
Sure.
Well, I will just answer your question. They create web pages. They create web pages that can be viewed. Cheryl is lovely enough to post them. Is it to the Our Space, Our Place space, if you will, Cheryl?
Yes.
I mean, they see the fruits of their labors. And I think one of the things that you, correct me if I get the quote incorrect, but one young lady said, she didn't even realize, you know, she said, wow, I didn't know this basically. She thought she knew everything about the web, but now it's kind of, she has like the underneath or under the hood of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And kind of one thing to see the pretty pictures up there, but yeah. another thing to know how they got there.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I got a chance to work with some young people for about 3 weeks. And a young man asked me, they're all visually impaired. And he said he wasn't paying attention at first. He was sort of half there. And then he came back and I noticed he was very engaged and blah, blah, blah. And he finally asked me, is this what the web is really like? Is this what I said? Yeah. Take a look. Look at your web browser. And he said, wow. And that made him, you know, it clicked then. You
yeah.
know, this is, you have so much under the hood. But as Cheryl said, these are the fundamental tools, if you will, or mm-hmm. HTML is the fundamental tool.
Right. So. And of course, that's the basis of everything.
Yes.
Even though these days people go way beyond HTML and they get
yes.
into things like JavaScript and,
totally,
you know. I don't know if C++ is still used. I know it was at one time. And I'm showing my programming age, which really, I mean, I retired in 2002, and 6 months after I retired, I was pretty much useless as a programmer because things had changed so much, and they're still changing.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And yeah. I would never call myself a programmer today because it's just not true. I don't know enough. I've got a lot of background, and that's all interesting, mm-hmm. but that doesn't do you a bit of good if you can't make things happen in the world of today.
It's true.
Yeah.
And one of the things I like to say about the fundamentals and just getting the basics is, one, the young person figures out whether this is something they want to do.
Right.
At all. And two, you know, they see that this comes first, the sequence of the thing. We've got to do this, then we have to do this. If we open that, tag or element, we have to close it. That, and it gives them a sense of flow, you know?
And that's one thing that never changes in programming.
That's
true. I don't care what language you're using, what
yep.
system you're working with. Everything has to be done in the right order.
Yes.
Programming a computer is kind of like dealing with a 2-year-old who's very yeah. literal minded. And if you tell yeah. the kid, go upstairs, take a bath and take off your clothes, he will go upstairs, jump in the tub, and
yeah.
afterwards he'll take off his clothes. And the computer is the same way.
Right.
So you
yes.
really have to get the order of it correct or bad stuff
so
happens.
True. Yeah.
And stuff happens.
I mean, we were doing links and I will be working with the young people again on links, which are crucial and, you know, central
yeah.
to the web. And they said, oh, well, it didn't work. And they're like, you know, they were so disappointed. Well, they came back the next week. We said, you know, even though I said this the first time, I sat there with my, you know, like my co-teacher, and we went through it, and we looked through all of their code, and they'd forgotten to close the tags, you know.
Just grabbed, you know, up everything and tried to make it part of the link.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I came back and I told them, you know, when they came back, I said, see, folks? And when it happened, though, they went, it was like an aha moment, you know? Oh!
Well, you know, I remember when I first got into programming, I had a lot of experience with code that I wrote that I thought was pretty awesome, and of course it didn't work. And I began, after a while, I began to say, partly in jest, but partly there was some seriousness to it. Why can't this computer read what I meant to say?
I don't know.
And I have to tell you, in the 30 years I was in the business, it never did.
No.
Never did.
No.
And it never will. Never will. So
amazing.
Have you had many people sign up for the course or for the camp as yet?
Not at present.
Okay.
We've got at least two kids who've expressed interest in participating.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say one of the really nice things about this year is last year we had a young lady who participated from Connecticut.
Nice.
And she joined us actually via Skype to participate. And this year we're partnering with another organization called Vision Aid. And they have actually found some volunteers who will be dedicated to sort of assist anybody who joins us remotely.
Ah, so people don't have to be at the physical site to participate then?
They do not. They do not. It would be nice if they're there, because I think there's a nice sort of camaraderie connection that grows up over the week. So for instance, this young lady basically participated with us like Monday through Thursday over Skype, and then the last day of the program, Friday, she came in program and spent the day with us. I think this year, I mean, we want, you know, kids to participate, or I should say we want students to participate, and we want to make it as easy and as flexible as possible.
Right.
And having the sort of dedicated volunteers to assist people who are participating remotely, I think, will allow us to do that. So poor Lynette isn't the instructor and remote teacher assistant.
Yes. Would it be perfectly acceptable to have a student who was in last summer's course say, you know, I want to come back and go for round two? Or
yes. Yes, actually, one of the kids who sent an email saying, sign me up, was there last year.
Oh, okay.
So at least one person wants to come back.
So in a way, you're kind of teaching this on a multi-level kind of basis, where some people are going to be beginners and other people are going to be more experienced, but they're all going to be in the class together, right?
Yes, but I think, I mean, we're not having like multiple curriculum going.
Yeah. Okay.
It's going to be one curriculum. And I'm thinking maybe, you know, what the student who came last year would get again this year is, I mean, last year, I don't think they showed up with notebooks to take notes or anything. They just sort of showed up.
Well, and you may have some of that this year with the new students, unless you tell them, bring your notebook.
Yeah, I think we will tell them that you may want to come and like record some of this or take notes or something.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely a hands-on course where, you know, you're engaged and you're sort of following instructions. And I've got to say, for myself, you know, not being a person with a coding background, it was so interesting to listen in and as Lynette said, to like understand, you know, that when you're writing code, there's a beginning and there's an end and you've got to follow certain sort of structures and rules and stuff like that.
That's right.
And also, as I said, again, not being a computer science type of person, for me, I mean, it was interesting because I thought, oh, wait, if I actually, like, wanted to really learn this, I think I could. I mean, it's not magic.
No, it's very definitely not. But what it does entail, as those of us who do any kind of programming know, is getting things in the right order and making sure you get everything. Because if you don't tell the computer to skip three lines before it prints, it's going to print everything on the same line. And you sit there going, why did it do that? And the reason is because it's a dumb machine that does what you tell it to do and nothing more.
Yeah. Yeah.
The code that we create is completely accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And then we turn around, even though what I tried to convey to the kids last year and will do again this year is you may not be using a screen reader or anything like that, but your friends whom, you know, or family members or anybody else out there can press the letter H and they'll go to a heading, the letter T and they'll go to a table and that kind of thing. And you want to make sure that you are making your code as accessible and clean and, you know, usable as possible.
That's right. That's right. And usable for everybody.
Yep.
So that it's the screen reader folks can use it and people mm-hmm. with low vision can use it.
Totally.
And people who maybe have learning disabilities, things will work for them.
Right.
And that's a difficult thing to do, but it's very important. Yeah. Very important.
And I've got to say, one of the things that's very impressive of Lynette, you don't need to listen to this, Lynette, is that, I mean, in all honesty, I mean, the way she teaches, it keeps the kids like totally engaged. And as she said, they're learning about sort of accessibility and all these things without being hammered over the head about it.
That's right.
Because I mean, so many websites you go to today, the aim is to make them sort of fancy and graphics and blah, blah. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there are, as Lynette said, there are ways to structure your website so that it's fully accessible to anybody who comes to your page.
And it can still be fancy and still be graphical and all of that, but it doesn't have to be a nightmare for people who don't use those things.
Right.
Exactly. It's all under the hood.
Right. So for anybody who has not yet signed up, and at this point I can't imagine why everybody in the whole state hasn't gotten there yet, but for those who have not, how do they do that?
Two ways. They could call us at 617-459-4084 and just leave a message telling me that they're interested in registering for the class, and I'll contact them.
Is that the number for Our Space, Our Place?
It is.
Okay.
And then the other way they could do it is they could just send me an email, and that's at president@ourspaceourplace, and put in the subject line like, coding camp or coding class or something, and just again let me know that they're interested.
Okay.
It's July 10th through the 14th.
Okay.
It's from, as I said, 9 to 2. Mm-hmm. And it is at the Microsoft office in Cambridge.
Okay.
I should say that there is a cost for the class. But if you're, you know, registered with the commission in your 16 through 21, the commission will hopefully cover your cost.
Okay.
And if you're young, so it's the classes from 14 through 21. Mm-hmm. And if you're younger, just sign up anyway, because we do have scholarships.
Now,
we'll make those available.
In the event that the commission does not cover the cost, we should probably tell people what they're going to be needing to save up their pennies and what they're going to have to save to do this.
So it costs about $280 a day to participate, and our days go from 9 to 2. It includes lunch, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And that's a five-day course, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and I should say that during lunch – I know people are like, oh, I could just hang out. Eh.
Nope. Think again.
We certainly provide lunch, but we want to maximize your time when you're there.
Well, certainly.
So we invite in professionals, both, you know, sighted and blind or low vision, who work in the technology field, to sort of talk about what they're doing and how they did it and all that sort of stuff.
So this is kind of 5 days of immersion, total immersion.
Yes. Yes.
In coding.
Yeah.
Well, I think the $1,500 that you would spend is well worth it. And it sounds like you've got a very laudable endeavor here, and one that I think is going to be a help to a lot of people, certainly the people who have signed up. And for those of you who miss it this year, will there be a chance next year again?
Oh, hopefully. Think so. Yes, yes.
Well, Cheryl and Lynette, I wish you the best of success in your course, in your class this summer, your coding camp, and hopefully we'll have you get back on the show again next year to plea for more enrollees for the new class.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Cheryl Cummings and Lynette Tatum telling us about Our Space, Our Places coding camp for this year. It's going to be an exciting challenge, so please sign up. That'll just about do it for this month's Council Connection. If you want to sign up for the chapter planning meeting for the Worcester chapter, contact Mary Heroyan at 508-853-6445. If you're interested in the Boston chapter planning meeting, contact Frank Ventura at 617-267-1067. If you have any questions or comments about anything you've heard on the show, please leave us a message in the BSCB mailbox at 617-923-4519. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again next month when we'll be back with another edition of Council Connection. Take care and have a good summer.